A little over a month ago, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention revised its recommended social distancing guidelines for children in schools, including lowering the amount of required space between students in most situations. In response to this guidance, the State Department of Health has updated its own rules and regulation for New York's schools. To understand what this means for educators around the state, we're joined once again by Bob Lowry, Deputy Director of the New York State Council of School Superintendents. Welcome back to the show, Bob.
Thanks for having me.
Broadly speaking, what are some of the big changes in the state's guidance for schools, which came out nearly 2 weeks ago now?
Right. The main one is it copies part of the CDC guidance, saying that, first of all, the CDC specifies four levels of risk of transmission of the coronavirus, low, moderate, substantial, and high. And then there are different rules regarding going from 6 feet to 3 feet for the various transmission levels and school levels. So essentially elementary schools, they can go to 3 feet no matter what the risk of transmission is in the surrounding county. At the other end, however, middle schools and high schools cannot go to 3 feet unless they can, quote, cohort all the students, cohort meaning students would stay together during the course of the day. That's common in elementary schools. Some districts, some schools were doing that from the beginning of the school year, but it's much harder to do in high school because students take electives. They're not all in the same classes with the same students throughout the day. And that's presented some complications for districts. And also, really can't switch to cohorting now that you're 8 months into the school year. There are other pieces in the guidance. Barriers are no longer recommended. Some districts have used barriers. There's recommendations regarding ventilation and surveillance testing of students and staff for the coronavirus. But the ones that have, the issues that have gotten the most attention, I would say, are again around the social distancing.
The cohorting that you mentioned, is that a requirement regardless of the transmission levels in a community when we're talking about middle school and high school? Or if we're in an area that might have, you know, very low levels of transmission, can a high school move to 3 feet without implementing cohorting?
Yes. It's only if a county is with the high level of transmission. But I should say, the CDC has a map online, which is updated day by day, showing the risk levels by county. And I checked this morning, I think we had seven counties which are substantial risk, and the remainder are high risk. And so that means that, and what the guidance says, that if you're in a high risk county, then you cannot go to 3 feet unless you institute cohorting. That's for middle or high school. These designations get updated daily. It makes it hard for districts to plan ahead. Where might we be in a week or two when we'd hope to go through, having students spaced 3 feet apart? Would we still be below the high level?
I assume mask wearing is still the norm throughout most of the day for students, teachers, and staff?
Actually, the guidance now requires mask wearing. The prior guidance allowed mask breaks. Now it says that except when students are eating or if there's some medical necessity, they must wear masks throughout the day. Apparently, there were some districts where they were not requiring students to wear masks continually, and they felt they had students spaced apart sufficiently to permit that. But that is also a change in the guidance, saying that mask wearing is now required throughout the entire day.
You mentioned that physical barriers are no longer recommended by the CDC in instances where social distancing can't be maintained. So does that mean schools might be removing physical dividers, barriers that might have gone up earlier in the year?
I'm not sure about that. I'd say certainly we have recommended against districts going out and purchasing barriers at this time, given the change in the guidance, and says not recommended. There's another piece in the state guidance which says ultimately the decision is a matter of community risk tolerance. And you know, with some of these district schools, they may have been using barriers throughout the school year. Without difficulty, community is satisfied. But other issues, for example, which is very clear cut that, you know, you must stay at 6 feet if you cannot do cohorting in a high risk county in middle or high school. So I'm not sure what districts do if they have been using barriers, but certainly we recommended against districts going out and purchasing barriers. And we did after the CDC guidance came out, because that also said that barriers were not recommended.
What's the status as a result of the latest state guidelines of testing mandates for faculty, staff, and students, especially in schools that are in either substantial risk of transmission areas or areas that are deemed high risk of transmission?
Well, it's not so much a mandate as a recommendation. The American Rescue Plan that was passed in March in Washington, it does provide funding for states to use to institute surveillance testing of the virus in school buildings. I believe New York State is expecting to have $285 million coming for that purpose. I'm not aware that the health department, our state health department, has finalized plans for how to use that. We have been part of discussions about that. But again, it's not required, an obstacle to doing it. Some districts have done it either voluntarily or when we had the micro cluster areas and requirements for districts to do testing. But an obstacle has been paying for it. Once this federal money starts to flow, that would remove that obstacle.
You're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're discussing the evolving social distancing guidelines for schools, and our guest is Bob Lowry, Deputy Director of the New York State Council of School Superintendents. What's been the reaction from teachers to this latest guidance from the State Department of Health?
You know, it probably varies from district to district. Certainly the statewide teachers union has stressed the idea of the need for a layered mitigation strategy, which, you know, would encompass rules around social distancing. They were early proponents of a statewide mask requirement and have advocated for institution of surveillance testing. I suspect that there are variations across districts. My sense is that teachers would prefer to be in the school building. Individual teachers would prefer to be in the classroom with their students if at all possible, but they want to be comfortable. So I suspect it varies across districts.
A big part of creating safe classrooms is going to be the use of federal funds that are designed to be used by schools to make accommodations for this pandemic era that we're living in. You mentioned earlier money for testing. What other pots of money will public schools be receiving in New York in response to the pandemic as the result of recent stimulus?
Yes, the American Rescue Plan provides, under that, New York State school districts will be receiving $8.2 billion. And the December stimulus legislation, that provided $3.85 billion that's being allocated among school districts. So added together, that's more than $13 billion. That's a very significant sum.
Yeah.
For a typical district, it's equivalent to like a 25% bonus on top of their regular state aid. But it's different from regular state aid in that it's temporary. December stimulus funding, that's required to be fully spent by September of 2023. And the rescue plan money passed in March, that's required to be fully spent by September 2024. So it's not required to be used immediately. Also, it's not just for pandemic mitigation strategies. There's a heavy emphasis on addressing what's referred to as learning loss, you know, the negative effects of the pandemic, not just on student learning, but also on their social, emotional well-being. And I think that the legislature did some good things with this money. Very little of it is being used to fund recurring costs, and only a very small part, $35 million out of over $13 billion, is actually being used to offset a reduction in state support. The governor's budget actually used $2 billion to offset reductions in state support. And also they have a requirement for districts to develop a plan, a year-by-year plan, for how they will spend the money, and emphasize the idea that it should be spent on non-recurring costs. And so, again, some of the money I expect will be used for pandemic mitigation, with the idea of trying to avoid taking on recurring costs that you would have to find a way to pay for after the federal money is gone. Facility improvements might be one use, improving ventilation. But again, there's a heavy emphasis on addressing learning loss. An example of a use there could be expanding summer school. Might do a much larger summer school program this year and next year than you would otherwise, but that would not be something that you would carry on indefinitely once the federal money was gone.
In May, voters in school districts around the state are going to be asked to approve budgets. Will those budgets likely reflect some of this federal money, or is this something where it's going to be spent further down the road and maybe not go through the traditional budgeting process?
I think that's another helpful thing that the enacted budget does. It designates these funds as what are referred to as grants and aid, and part of the special aid fund that districts maintain rather than the general fund. So, districts would not be incorporating them into the budgets that they submit to the voters for voter approval. That's on the general fund. But again, there is this plan requirement. And districts are required to seek public input into that. And I think superintendents, business officials, board members, they're trying to get a grasp on what this money can be used for, what it cannot be used for. The federal statute makes repeated references to evidence-based strategies. And so a priority for all three of the groups that I mentioned, ourselves, school boards, and business officials, is to help our respective members develop effective ways to use this money. As I said, it's a very significant pool of funding. It's not just for pandemic mitigation, so it could make a very positive impact on schools, but that requires planning carefully. July 1, the deadline for these plans, that's very aggressive. But we presume that districts will be permitted to revise their plans as events unfold and they get a better understanding of the needs of their students.
Well, we've been speaking with Bob Lowry. He is the Deputy Director of the New York State Council of School Superintendents. Bob, as always, thank you so much for making the time.
Yep, thank you.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by the New York State AFL-CIO, a federation of 3,000 unions fighting for working people by keeping New York State union strong. UnionStrongNY.com for more information.